The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
This is Kevin Wallace for NBC5 News, your place.
Devin's on the road, likes to ride motorcycles. You feeling a little burnt this morning over the Dollar Mountain story out there here, Devin? Welcome to the show.
Oh, big time. You know, they put us on the front page this time. No, I just wanted to comment on that. We've been up there.
Yeah, by the way, let me before you move forward here, Devin, let me just mention it. The story was how a lot of hand-wringing over motorcyclists ripping up Dollar Mountain, and as soon as they build a trail, then the motorcyclists come and rip it up again is how the story goes.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well,
right?
The thing is, all these trails, they switch back through every hill climb we have on that side of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of area there that's straight up and down, and that's what we like to hit on the bike. And, you know, they can't utilize it for mountain bikes, so why can't we ride that portion? And by all means, we'll stay off their trail, but let us ride up there. You know, we pay our taxes. We contribute just as much as everyone else in the town.
Yeah.
But there's also a 400-acre chunk of BLM up there, and they got approval to put another mountain bike trail through there. But I'm talking to BLM, and they said, no, we don't want motorcycles up there either.
But you see, that's just it. They don't want to, I would imagine that what the tourism industry is probably hoping for is that we're going to have a nice, quiet, sustainable, it's going to be people walking with their walking sticks and in their yoga pants. And,
Starbucks coffee.
Not even Dutch Bros, right? It has to be Starbucks, right? Because Dutch Bros is too Southern Oregon. We don't want it to look too Southern Oregon up there when it comes right down to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know I'm being a little sarcastic, but you know what it is all about, though, is that they bought Dollar Mountain, talking about the city, and so they want to keep a pretty tight reign of control on it more than anything else. Isn't that really what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think if people up on Starlight, you know, all the Californians in their $3 million houses up there. But, you know, they destroyed Torch Creek over there outside of Merlin. The BLM had the loggers cover up all of our trails up there as well. And that's from the BLM and out of the Watchman's mouth up there.
Now, Devin, is there any truth to those claims, though, in the article that the motorcyclists are, you know, tearing up that land, and then there's erosion from the rains that come?
Well, here's the kicker. You know, they're digging tank traps up there just in spite to block off trails. And also, they're cutting down a bunch of oak trees and madrone trees right over trails. And mm-hmm. It's like, okay, who's doing more damage now? You know, a little deer, our motorcycle trails are like little deer trails through the woods. And it's like, who's doing more damage now when you're digging tank traps and you're falling a bunch of trees, you know?
Well, Devin, I think I've got the solution for you. If you're dealing with, you know, they just don't like the noise and the exhaust and stuff, you're all going to have to go to Tesla motorcycles, and then they'll allow you to ride on Dollar Mountain until the lithium-ion batteries explode in the Tesla motorcycles and set the mountain on fire. What do you say?
Yeah. Well, those bikes do have a lot more horsepower than these our motorized ones, so we might have to go that route.
Yeah, but you will be so politically favored. You'll put environmentalist left people kind of confused. I don't know. Well, wait a minute. It's a electric motorcycle. I'm supposed to love this, but oh, it's from Tesla. It's evil incarnate, orange man. They won't know what to do. They might leave you alone. All right.
But I don't know. It's just a battle they're not going to win. You know, they can only corner us so much, and then, you know, we get fed up with it. So, you know, we got enough hiking trails around here. And they think these mountain bike trails are going to bring in $2 billion in revenue. I think they're smoking something, because there's just not that many mountain bikers.
It's really about satisfying the local recreational needs there. I'm kind of with you on this one. I'm guardedly. I mean, I can see if there's a real issue, but I would dare say that Mother Nature erodes all the time up on Dollar Mountain and has been for years.
Right.
Okay.
Especially decomposed granite like that.
Darn straight. Thanks for the call there, Devin. Interesting take on it. Yeah. And by the way, I say this as someone who's not necessarily a fan of, you know, listening to motorcycles, but there's another side of me that says, you know, it's kind of like a Sound of Freedom, too. So I mix. I mix. But, yeah, they really were painted as a kind of, you bad, bad people riding motorcycles. How dare you get into your yoga pants with your Starbucks? Okay. All right, Dr. Powers will join me here in a few minutes after the Kim Komando digital update. We'll have some fun with that and talk about all the latest hissy fit. And also the founding of Medford. Founding of Medford is what we're going to be looking at today. I enjoy these periods where we talk about how cities came to be, all right? Also within the city of Medford, Sky Park Insurance. Great friends of the program, long-term sponsor, good people. And between Steve Yancey helping you save money, he's helped me save money on car insurance, home insurance, and a whole bunch more because he's an independent and is able to work with many different companies, and it's worked for me. Call him at 261-5444, 261-5444, and get a quote. Find out if he can do something for you, okay? Now, if you're ready to turn 65, you're thinking Medicare, I'm so confused. It's designed to be confusing, but that's why Lynn Barton is there at Sky Park. Her number, 499-0958, and she'll help you deal with the supplemental insurances and various things going on there. 499-0958. SkyParkINS.com.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Harper, what should we highlight in our Gerson's Home commercial?
Milk coming out of my nose.
How's that?
Remember when we were at the dining room table eating cookies?
That's FastGrowingTrees.com for an additional 15% off using the code KIM.
Hear KMED in Grants Pass on 105.9 K290 AF Rogue River in South Jackson County on 106.7 K294 AS Ashland.
Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law. DennisPowersBooks.com. Every week we do a Where Past Meets Present. That's the name of his latest book. You can get that at HellgatePress.com. Doctor, welcome back. Great to have you on, sir.
It's always good to be with you, Bill, and especially with everything that all of us are able to learn by where we go into.
All right, we're going to have a palate cleanser first. Then we're going to get back to the news and Trumpy and the running for a third term and the homeless situation in Grants Pass. We want to get it through the Legal Eagles view here. But first, let's talk about the founding of Medford. Now, you're going to tell me how Medford was founded. I'm thinking what happened. It must have been around 1880, 1883, that an East Coast chain restaurant was looking for a place where we could open up 100 different chain restaurants. And then they decided, they looked at Medford in Southern Oregon. They decided, this is where we go. You know, it's not just the old spaghetti factory. Okay. Is that how Medford came to be for chain restaurants?
And actually that is the case now. But what was interesting, my friend, which I love the palate cleanser and the way that you're setting this up, is because of the fact that when we go back, it is like 150 years, what we had then was that Medford was just unbroken land covered by high brush, and there was no one there.
So a whole bunch of nothing in the 1880s, right?
It was nothing.
All right.
And what's so amazing, though, is the fact that at that time, Grants Pass, Ashland, and Jacksonville were already towns, and what happened then was the railroad, this is where the railroad came through. The railroad had come through, had set up Grants Pass, so about a year before. But Grants Pass was already going because of the river and a lot of other things going that we'll go into later.
Yeah, but it was important that Grants Pass did not have the railroad bypassing it, so that helped Grants Pass. The railroad in those days was the internet of today, really. You were on the map, right? With the railroad.
It was, and what happened, though, was that some towns were made by the railroad, and some weren't, such as Jacksonville, and there were other small little towns that we'll get into later that just disappeared on the vine when the railroad just missed them. But what happened here was that the town's name came from the railroad's civil engineer, who named when he recorded the plat map for the railroad, that he named it for his hometown of Medford, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And what happened, though, was that we had four men owning equal shares, including one by the name of C.C. Beckman.
Well, now we know where the Beekman came from, right? There we go.
That's right. And, and actually, with your listeners in Jacksonville and such, you know, he is a major player in Jacksonville, being C.C. Beckman of the bank and all the different things there. But he and three others conveyed the land to the Oregon and California Railroad for its depot, right-of-way, and facilities. Then, when it was finally the tracks reached Medford, which was mid-January of 1884, you had a few saloons and tents. A year later, it was 400 people with 110 businesses and residences. It was located extraordinarily well, and Medford then incorporated just a year later. Its first ordinances bill, which I really love, is the first one was to punish and prevent riots and disturbances.
In a translation, bar fights in those saloons, right?
Oh, yeah, that were taken off to and had to involved other buildings. And then you had to prevent miners, the second one, from loitering around the railroad depot.
Oh, I love that. This was actually so kids were hanging out by the train station, so they had to stop that. Okay.
And, already.
But I think my favorite early ordinance, though, from the city of Medford is the one about the animals. About taking care
That's
of animals.
Right.
Which one was that, if I recall?
That was banning hogs from running wild.
Oh, now see, we did that then. We banned hogs from running wild, but we can't ban the homeless people from running wild around here in Southern Oregon. Don't you find that interesting?
Oh, yeah, because of our politics here, which is really off left. In Oregon, we are the petri dish nationally. Because you can read about the latest one just going to Fox News.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you, though, about this. So the growth of Medford was actually relatively steady, but it was not really slow. But boom times were coming, and that's when things really kicked up. And what happened?
That is the key thing here in terms of its growth. Which was the orchard boom and bust, which was in the early 1900s, and it was to the old Chamber of Commerce called the Medford Commercial Club promoted a very successful advertising campaign about the great advantages of the area's orchard industry. Now, what happened then, Bill, was that when we go back to Chicago, we go back to really Harvard and Yale and other places, at the same time, there was this the way of doing things for these wealthy families was the first child would inherit the wealth and take over the family's business. Mm-hmm. But the second one would be looking to set up another business somewhere else. And the word went out that there is real wine grape gold back. And actually, then it was oranges and apples.
Oranges, apples, peaches, things like that. And so you would have the second born because they would have to find a way to strike out on their own in order to make some money. They weren't going to be given the wealth. That's interesting. So the Chamber of Commerce or the commercial club then advertises. Southern Pacific Railroad, no doubt, was more than happy to advertise this too and bring a bunch of people out here to plant orchards, right?
Well, that's true, and the town couldn't handle the incoming swell of all these people coming in, and the city actually erected Medford a tent city, and the railroad even put up overnight the new arrivals in its train station. So by 1912, Medford had a high school, four banks, elementary schools, passenger depot, Carnegie Library, several movie theaters, an opera house. It had electricity, telephone service out to the outskirts. The streets were paved.
And we had an astonishing number of automobiles, according to the old Medford Mail Tribune, right?
That's exactly right, because we had one automobile for every 30 people, when nationally there was only one for about 50. But then boom turned to bust. Population really declines.
Mm-hmm.
But the other key thing, so for Medford, it's railroad, orchard boom, and then the third one that really brought its significant rise was the municipal airport, because Oregon in the 1920s And this is the one bill that we had the dirt landing strip inside the racetrack.
Yeah.
Became Oregon's first municipal airport in 1922, and it was located midway between Portland and San Francisco, and it got the mail contract. This is George Seeley and the rest.
Yeah, so this was a perfect location. You could stop here for not only mail, but you get some food, get a fill-up, and then on to Portland, right? That kind of thing.
Absolutely right. And then actually what it was that you had, when World War II came by, you know, you had Camp White, and then you had the cycles of the timber industry. Then we had health care that really came in. Now we're looking at the 1960s, 70s, 80s, with the internet, with computers, retailing cars, Lithia, all these other ones that came through. And so now we have Medford being the largest populated town, and also you know, the county seat for Jackson County with 86,000 people, 90,000 more than likely in the next census. So what we're having is, because of all these different things, Medford, which was nothing, it was sagebrush with other towns going, because of all these things, an entrepreneurial type of Medfordites becomes the place to go. And actually, Bill, I was really surprised about this. If you go into what's looked upon as the Medford Municipal outlet, and the key thing is when you bring in talent, Phoenix, and another ones, the statistical city is 200,000 for Medford.
When you add it all together, sure. Well, so, I can't exactly say that we miss the days of the ordinances needed for wild hogs running through the streets. I'm okay with that, but I love that. So, I mean, and we were talking about, now, didn't we have one of the first stoplights, too, in the country?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because of the fact when you have all these cars, and the cars were here then because you had these landowners.
Well, you had so much money coming. You had so much money coming in at that time, right?
And they were going actually back and forth between the city and where the orchards were, which were outside of town. And also, you had the money coming in. And then, if you took a look, the University Club started. Oh, I think it was 1909 or something like that. And people might say, well, that's a long time ago. But if you look at the people that were there, you had Harvard, Yale, they all were college graduates.
Big brains.
Showing
big brains.
A microcosm of what was bringing everything else into this region and to the city of Medford.
And back when going to Harvard and Yale really meant something, prior to woke you, for sure. Now, I'm kind of curious. We're going to have to do something about the stoplights at some point. How many police officers did the city of Medford hire to get everybody for you know, writing tickets as they went through them automatically, you know, like they're doing now?
Well, what's cool is the fact that it would be minimal, because of the fact that they'd be putting their money into going ahead and building the Opera House.
Indeed. All right. Point well taken. Hey, Doc, I love the story of these founding of the area city. So we'll have another one next week. Okay. Good stuff as always. Appreciate you. Hang on. We'll continue. And where past meets present, we go to the present here next on The Bill Myers Show, KMED 828.
For property owners, large or small, BCS has
lumber.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
For past meets present, Dr. Powers, and we're back to the present at this point. Got to ask you, Doc, with Trump over the weekend talking to the NBC people on Air Force One, and talking about going for a third term. He said, well, you know, a lot of people are asking me about this. Part of me was just like, oh, come on, don't even go there, Don. But the other part of it is, because I'm thinking about the Constitution and such, but I'm thinking, is he just trolling everybody with that at this point, going for a third term? What do you think? who was that really intended for? Because I don't think it was the NBC News clowns that President Trump really cared about talking about a third term with.
Oh, no, it'd be for Putin.
For Putin. Okay, why would that be for Putin?
And he is, Trump is really brilliant. because he would go ahead, and for those that said, oh, well, wait a minute, we don't have to really play ball with the Trump administration. We can just stretch it out because he'll be gone, in 3.5 years.
Oh, in other words, this was about then waiting him out, thinking that they could wait him out and give them some doubt, give the Bears some doubt here. Okay.
Oh, and I love the fact that he also said that to the party of hate, which is the fact that they're saying, well, we'll be able to take it over in 2028, and and we will take over this country. And he's saying, not so fast, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All righty. Because he was talking about things like, okay, J.D. Vance becomes president and then would agree to hand it over. I don't think there's anything that is technically constitutional there, right? We just want to be clear with one another or not.
Absolutely. And the part of the thing that really is good is that he addresses different issues coming up with a brilliant mind. It really is. When you think about the snooze Biden and the racist Obama, and when we look at what's happening now, I just go ahead and say, thank you, God.
All right. You think that it's going to be Liberation Day? I know that the business folks don't seem to be real, real happy about the reciprocal tariff thing going on. What do you say?
Bill, in my own personal opinion, what it is the fact that the far left, and there's no question that Oregon is the petri dish, as we've just seen in the Grants Pass permanent injunction that came through.
You betcha.
I was checking on that one. But when we take a look at it, Oregon with its politics is the petri dish for the United States. There are several times when I can go ahead and I'll just go to National Fox News and there it is. All about Oregon because the fact of the Salem far-lefters. But as to the tariffs, the far-left, which is trying to overturn the election any way they can, they're saying, oh, there is no election. We're going to be back in power because they hate being out of power. And they're not for this country. And so what happens is that, for example, on CNBC, they launched off this morning, early morning, with how the tariffs are going to go ahead and destroy the toy industry. Well, I love the way they're cherry-picking things because there are a lot of areas like steel and like cars that are much more important than toys, and here they're coming in with this gibberish about toys.
Well, and it's true, though.
It's in China anyway.
But it is. But the thing about cars is important. And one of the challenges that I've seen with this, and I could see if you start small, but there's no time to adjust. And I think that's where President Trump might be going a little bit off the rails on this, because you're not going to change supply chains overnight, not even in a few months, not even in a few years necessarily. It takes time to motivate that kind of investment. You, as a retired professor of business law, you get that. You get that.
Oh, Bill, I totally agree with you on the concept. It takes up to 2 years plus to put in an automobile plant. I mean, the one that has just been started by Honda back south.
Yeah, are you talking about Hyundai or Honda?
About 4 years ago.
Oh, that's the one from 4 years ago. So Hyundai then, no doubt, though, Hyundai plans on opening up a factory and a steel mill, too, which is, I think it's in Louisiana. We were talking about that with Eric Peters last week. And that'll be good. But even that's probably something that was decided a couple of years ago, maybe even longer, longer term planning.
Oh, Bill, you're absolutely right with your point. It could very well be as to when it started. But you see, the approach that is missed by the drive-by media that is trying to overturn the results because they want the money that comes in from Biden's advertising.
Yeah, and they want USAID to continue cutting checks to the NGOs. We get that. We understand that's
it. And they hate talk radio. So the key thing on all these things is that Trump can sit back there and say and cut different deals where, I tell you what, on tariffs, they can put the tariffs, reciprocal tariffs, out for 9 months if you help us with stopping fentanyl now.
Mm-hmm.
Or if
so in other words, the tariffing power is really then used as the blunt force trauma bargaining chip, in other words. Would that be a fair way of looking at it, in your opinion?
And after Biden and Obama, after how they really killed this country with their DEI, where they just basically said to all the countries in the world, if you push DEI, hey, we're not going to push you to put monies in for NATO. Mm-hmm. We're not going to push you in terms of immigration. We're not going to do this. Just push DEI. It was a fundamental destruction of what is this country, and that's what Trump is dealing with.
I will be guardedly optimistic about this. I know the markets are not happy right now, though, but this is the way it goes.
Because of the fact that these people are self-oriented. They want to be able to be present and get their $10 million bonus and not have it adversely affected by tariffs. And it could very well be that this doesn't work out as we'd like. But here's the key thing to me, Bill, overview, mm-hmm. is that Trump is able to work it to where, rather than having a ripping stock market and a ripping economy for a year and a half, and then have it come down, before the 2026 elections, he's actually running this in a way long term, and on short term he will have the chance before those elections to do it. It is a fundamental thing. I saw that Obama did and Biden did,
mm-hmm.
and also when I went and talked to my deep throat in Washington D.C., he said they're trying to go ahead and maneuver now, which is a good thing to do, because rather than Bush 2 that got caught in terms of the market continuing, then ran into problems, and then he was lucky to get the second term.
All right, Doc, I'll tell you what. Why don't we hold off here, join me after the next break here, and let's dig into the Grants Pass decision, okay, the injunction. I'm sure you've had a lot of time to look at that and give me your legal take on that. Can we do that next?
Oh, wherever you want to go, I'm there for you.
All right, will do. This is the Bill Meyer Show, where past meets present, 8:39.
Honey, we're out of water again. Did you call Clouser Drilling to discuss a replacement well?
Not yet. I just talked to a company who said they'll beat anybody's price no matter what.
No way. Remember the cheap plumber, electrician, the cheap roofer who disappeared halfway through?
Mailbox full.
Or the landscaper who charged double the estimate? Our well is way too important of an investment. We need someone reputable, reliable, experienced, and fair. I'm calling Clouser.
Visit clouserdrilling.com.
Is your business or personal tax return under IRS audit? Tell the IRS First Response Resolution has got it. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point, your local tax resolution experts. Visit firstresponseirs.com and talk to Zach in Eagle Point. He'll defend your rights as a taxpayer.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Two Dogs Fabricating carries North Star flatbeds and trailers, along with a full line of Horizon and Iron Bull trailers. But we built our business on in-house custom fabrication. All custom jobs are under one roof, saving time and bringing costs down while constructing your bed or trailer exactly the way you want it. So if you have a unique trailer or flatbed in mind, Two Dogs will design and build and have you on the road in just a few weeks. Two Dogs Fabricating. Our doghouse is on Bryan Way, just off Sage Road. Visit twodogsfab.com.
Are you a renter? Do you know that for the price of a pizza, you can purchase insurance to protect your life's possessions? Your landlord's insurance won't cover your belongings in a fire or theft. Make sure to protect yourself and your valuables. Buy renter's insurance. It covers your belongings, provides liability protection, and may pay for additional living expenses, such as hotel bills or restaurant meals, if a covered loss forces you to temporarily move out. Renter's insurance is affordable. It often costs less than $20 a month. Ask your insurance agent or company about multi-policy discounts when purchasing renter's insurance. The Division of Financial Regulation has a shopping tool to help you compare renter's insurance policies. Go to dfr.oregon.gov and type renter's insurance into the search bar. Spending that pizza money on renter's insurance will protect you when you need it the most. This message brought to you by the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Good morning.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
And if you have some real pizza money, you can head down to Jay Austin & Company, Gold and Silver Buyers, and pick up an ounce of gold, which has soared. Hey, Doc, I don't know if you have kept price on the price of gold, but it has gone up $100 since last Monday, really. We were at about $3,015 a week ago. $3,116 this morning is where we are.
Yeah, quite an increase over the last 6 months.
What do you think gold is telling us right now? Is this just about an instability kind of play, maybe a war play, because Europe is shipping gold into the United States at this point, and big money seems to be going for gold no matter what the cost? Just have to ask.
Oh, you got it. Big money, plus the fact that you're not looking at interest rates going up.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, it looks like they're coming down, because with the large hedge funds, they will borrow to go ahead, to go long on the gold, and you're close to it. You're absolutely right. The fear factor is there. Tariffs, you got it.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things setting up for instability, I guess, is what we're talking about. Now, it might be instability for an eventually good outcome is what we hope for. But, in the meantime, you might look at 3115 gold right now and say, hey, I have scrap gold in my house. I have some old rings or something. Take it down to Jay Austin. They'll take care of you. Good people. One of my oldest sponsors here. And I know I'm kind of mixing up the talk with Dr. Powers with Jay Austin, but really, really good people. It's a 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. You can sell your scrap gold, or if you're like me, when the big money's going at it, part of me's thinking, maybe I don't have enough. But either way, they'll help you out. JayAustinBrokers.com, GrantsPassCoins.com, FortuneReserve.com on the web, too. The recognized experts, Jay Austin.
And Bill, they are great because based on your recommendation, we've been there in terms of the Ashland office, and they do an excellent job on gold, on jewelry, on a lot of the things that you've brought up.
All right. Thank you very much, Doc. I appreciate that take on it. Wanted to shift it then to this injunction that came out of Grants Pass on Friday afternoon. Preliminary injunction. This is a permanent injunction, by the way, in the Grants Pass homeless case. And this is Circuit Court Judge Sarah E. McLaughlin. And I don't necessarily want to throw the judiciary under the bus here, Doc. You know that, because I can't help but think that maybe the judge felt she had to go in that direction because of what the state legislature did, legislating homelessness response, basically taking the Boise decision, which was overturned by the Supreme Court, but putting that into state law. Is that what we're looking at here? Or is it another way of looking at it, just another maybe, left-wing judge doing what he or she would want? I don't know. How do you see this?
That's good framing. That really is. Because as I mentioned, Oregon is a petri dish for the far left.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when I will just go to Fox News, if you will. And I can read about the latest thing that Salem has pulled off nationally people are laughing at. On this particular one, they came up with a subjectively reasonable criteria for the homeless. And what's interesting, Bill, first for these circuit judges, there's something along the lines of 150 of these circuit judges throughout Oregon in the state court system, and they're making anywhere between $140,000 and $160,000. And what came through on this one is that if you look at the plaintiff in this case, it is the one.
Yeah, it's Disability Rights Oregon filed the suit.
Disability Rights Oregon, and it is the nonprofit, the NGO that the state. That's federally funded. It'd be great if DOGE could get into this, because we have an NGO, as you're pointing out so well, that brought the suit on an emergency basis here in Grants Pass, because the fact that they have the funding, they have the legal attorneys that are doing it. It's a Portland outfit that came down here. When you look at the petition, my friend, as to all the different, they have a variety. And when I first heard this, I thought, uh-oh, passed. And the reason for the uh-oh was the fact that they're bringing in disability rights, which was not part of that original decision that went up to the Supreme Court.
So this is looked at then as another wrinkle then to attack any control of the homelessness population. Is that kind of what I'm hearing here?
Absolutely right. Because these NGOs, especially we're seeing it here in Oregon, because we're seeing what would have happened if the chameleon had won the presidency over Trump. What we're finding out is this petri dish where they bring in these lawsuits. And this is one to where this, you know, as soon as you saw disability, but they define it differently than federal, because they define disability as mental illness. They define, and you see, that's what's not coming out in this decision. It is a variety of things. And they go ahead on this, out-of-town funding, out-of-state funding that's coming into a Portland outfit designated by the state for the homeless for disabilities. And what comes in is preliminary injunction blocking the city.
The city can't really endorse or enforce, rather, any camping rules. From what, except for a couple of parks here, apparently, until they have at least housing for 150, and I guess that is considered reasonable. Isn't this the problem when you have a judge in charge of deciding what is reasonable in the state legislature?
And the law? And the problem is that we know that there would be agreements between Salem and our governor and this NGO. And to increase it from 90 to 150, what they're doing is this is about state control, disability control over a local matter.
Okay, this is essentially then the governor and the minions attacking Grants Pass, ultimately.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then they're saying you can't do anything, being the city of Grants Pass. You can't cite people, arrest or fine them for camping on public property. You can't force people to leave campsites. You cannot remove campsites. They're not clearly abandoned. Oh, right.
It's almost as if the courts have now, with this law put in place by the legislature, these laws, have essentially held these cities hostage. And maybe it's because maybe the real problem is because Grants Pass, unlike Medford, let's say, Medford, I think, just got in line and said, okay, yeah, we'll do whatever it takes. We'll help you stay drug addicted and mentally ill, I guess. But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's true. And you see, the problem with the ultra control that the far left has in Salem, the ultra control is seeing itself on this because these people really want to get to where the real money is. If they're here in city councils here and then they're far left enough, like Ashley, you can get into Salem. Then from Salem, you want to go where the real money is, which is Washington, D.C. And there is no thought, zero thought.
I wanted to ask you a legal question. I don't know if you can answer this or not. I know that the city manager of the city of Grants Pass had brought up something in one of the conversations that I read. I don't have it in front of me, but I know I read it, in which he had mentioned, well, why don't we just have a jury decide what is reasonable? Because would that not be more proper to have the community decide what is a reasonable response, a reasonable way of dealing with the homelessness community, rather than a judge? What say you?
Oh, I like that. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be very likely. And the only reason is we saw this in Ashland with the hoopla going over a city manager, where finally they got in a city manager that was more appropriate to what the city council wanted. It's all about power. Local wants to consolidate their power.
Well, I guess what I'm asking for is there some law that says that it is up to a judge, a circuit court judge, and a circuit court judge only, to decide what is reasonable? Is there a legal definition out there that says, hey, I'm sorry, if there's a question here, the only person you can talk to is a black robe person who appointed by Governor Brown, in this particular case?
Well, the reason why I'm laughing with you, my friend, is because that's the problem we have, because of the fact that the judges are elected.
Well, they're elected after being appointed, though. You know that, and they all get appointed by the same point of view people.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because you have the same entrenched philosophy that we saw overwhelmingly rejected in the national election, but we just can't get rid of it. Came close with the last gubernatorial election, but now we're just back to the status of far left.
I wanted to ask you another legal question with regard to something that President Trump was proposing, because what we're dealing with here in the homelessness community, and I have great sympathy for people who are drug addicted, mentally ill. I remember I've been watching that KOBI story one time in which the drunk guy is held up there. We're not bad people, talking about as they're being moved. And they're right. They're not bad people. They're humans. And
that's true.
And my heart swells and bleeds for them in that particular respect. Like, there, but for the grace of God. Here is the issue, though. We now know that guy was being held up by two other homeless guys because, he was too drunk to stand up at 7 o'clock in the morning. There are behavioral problems with many of these folks. What we've been living with has been years of the Obama administration's housing first deal. That was the way they would look at homelessness. Homelessness is a cause of lack of housing. That's where they would go. Not a lack of proper or appropriate behavior by people in the homelessness community. Hey, someone's tossed out of their home because they became unemployed through no fault of their own, got a big medical bill, medical problem. I get that. I understand that. But a large, large portion of these people in these tent cities are drug addicted, mentally addicted, alcohol, mentally ill, rather, or a combination of all three. That's just it. And Housing First would say you just give them a house no matter what. But President Trump is now saying that he would like to switch that on its head and go to a treatment first kind of thing in which people would be in camps. Let's say if you're homeless, but you would need to go through treatment in order to be able to get housing. And if you're an alcoholic, you're going to get treated for that. If you're a drug addict, you're going to get treated for that. If you're a mental illness, we're going to treat you for this and try to get you better. Is that something which can pass the black robe bandit point of view, in your view? Is that something that might actually start holding sway in Oregon even?
Well, that's an excellent idea. Excellent. And that's something that people would like. The problem that we have is that we could look at Oregon with Salem. Mm-hmm. We could look at nationally with all of the, but it's not just the judges. These judges, a lot of the ones that were appointed was Mitch McConnell's fault last year. But on the other hand, these judges are good fundraisers for the far left.
So you think there's too much political, there's too much political juice, in other words, to keep status quo focused on housing only rather than the actual treatment and forcing it?
They're going to fight it because as soon as Trump makes an executive order, there's already 140 orders in there, which is the constitutional crisis, 140 lawsuits against Trump.
What is the odds then, or what are the odds you think that we'll have the Supreme Court start reining some of that in? Because otherwise, we're going to have an executive who was not able to govern the executive branch if we keep going where we are.
We are all hoping that the Chief Justice and the Notre Dame Law School professor will see their way, that what they've been complaining about during Biden's administration, which was the use occasionally of temporary injunctions, which are not temporary. They put in 10 years, these judges in all these lawsuits for the district court of the federal court system, my friend, are going ahead and putting in a temporary injunction saying, I just need about 10 days to make a decision.
All right. Do you believe that'll get reined in at some point here?
And then they go ahead and put it in another 10 days.
Yeah, no, I get that. Can this be reined in by the court?
They're going to have to, because otherwise it's a constitutional crisis. But you see, the problem is that the Chief Justice is more concerned, really, seriously, with his image. He thinks he's a marshal in Madison versus Marshall, but he's not. He remember the way that he held up and supported Obamacare that they're using at top law schools as to, do you think this is really a good decision? And they're saying no, where Roberts went out of his way to uphold. Now, the consistency argument where I think it's 50-50, I think eventually it will happen. It will happen that they're going to say that some of these temporary restraining orders are permanent ones, and you can't have one judge who goes ahead and hits all 50 states and stops it because of political thoughts. It's not precedent.
Yeah, because this is the real crisis I have with one judge in one small district then doing this for the entire country. That's not what the founders, I think, meant about this. Needs reined in quickly. Doc, out of time. I got to roll, okay? But thank you so much. We'll talk again next week, as always, okay? Thank you.
Hey, my friend, you're always rocking and rolling, and have a good week.
All right, thank you very much. And we'll be back for Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday tomorrow morning on KMED and KBXG.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precision and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need.